Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by LifeWest, the chiropractic college. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, hello, everybody. Dr. Ron Oberstein, president of Life Chiropractic College West, and welcome to another edition of our Life West Leadership Line. And today, coming all the way from upstate New York, I got a very dear friend, Dr. Scott Rosa. Hey, Dr. Scott, good to see you.
Good to see you, Dr. Oberstein.
Yeah, it's wonderful, man. Scott and I go way back, and we're going to let me give you a little bit of information on Dr. Scott. He's been on the show before. I've been looking to get him back on because he's doing amazing stuff in research. But let me just tell you a little bit about him. Graduated from Palmer Davenport in 87. One of his mentors in Davenport was Dr. Crowder. And if anyone that went to Davenport, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you'll know Dr. Crowder, you know, worked in the B.J. Palmer Clinic. One of three people, I believe, that Dr. B.J. allowed to adjust patients in his in the research center there, in the clinic there. Amazing man. And Dr. Scott was mentored by him. So when he came out, he was doing upper cervical, HIO at that time, you know, toggle HIO. And then a few years later, switched over, wanted to look for some kind of instrument adjusting, and got hooked up with AO. Not that AO is any different than other instrument adjustings, but, you know, it made sense to him, followed it. He's been an AO practitioner ever since then. 37 years in practice, and he is doing amazing things in the research world. He teaches all over the country. We've had him on our stage at the college and at the Wave. He is just an incredible teacher. If you've seen him before, he's got a very high profile thing around Jim McMahon that showing some very cool imaging of that, and he's just really revolutionizing what we're doing in chiropractic. He teaches for the ICA Upper Cervical Diplomat Program. He's on the research council of Atlas Orthogonal. He does work with head and neck trauma. I mean, I can go on and on, imaging, on and on. This guy is the package when it comes down to it. And he's a self-proclaimed geek. True? That was your word. So anyways, that's about Dr. Scott. Let's jump in, man, because I, you know, we've got a time period I want to be able to hit, and I want to make sure that we get it all. So talk about the geek right now. Just, you know, bring that out, because we're going to go into research. Today's going to be the phenomenal stuff that you're doing and that's happening right now.
Well, thank you. So thank you for the honor of having some time with you today. So my problem started back many, many years ago. I obviously started treating a lot of patients that came into the office with, you know, confirmed head neck traumas. And I got tired of the imaging studies coming back, MRIs, CAT scans, saying normal, when I knew that they were suffering. So I felt there was some form of a disconnect between the imaging that was being done at that time or what the imaging was looking for in contrast to what the patients were presenting. So luckily, I ended up taking Dr. Croft's course many, many years ago, back in the 2000s.
In San Diego, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I took that course, one of the greatest courses I've ever taken, and it taught me so many things that my education kind of fell short in. But more importantly, it updated me on things that were not happening earlier on in my practice. It started happening later on, like as an example. In 1984, injuries to the neck went up 268% because they enacted the rigid bumper and seat back rule, making cars more rigid. And therefore, more rigid vehicles created more load and strain into the cervical area and certainly the upper cervical area. So I started seeking out ways and trying to figure out how could I go ahead and learn on why these patients are suffering and what is the present state of imaging missing. I ended up getting a digital motion X-ray machine based on my education from Dr. Croft. And truth be told, I had the first case I had ever done that we found significant injuries on. I was pulled into court as an expert, and we won that case. We got a jury verdict, a very high verdict, but I'll never forget the defense attorney said to me, motion x-ray, MRI is the gold standard. And then I said to myself, one day I'm going to try to figure out how to show these injuries on MRI. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I then went ahead and went to a conference in Breckenridge, Colorado. They were handing out upright MRI technology booklets. And I looked at it and I go, this might be the answer. So I called up in an upright imaging center, not too far from my office. The person that owned it, I said, you might think I'm a nut. I'd like to position my patients in a posture that the DMX showed the bones moving beyond their normal boundaries and see if I can see the soft tissue. She said, sure, come down. The first scan I did showed a complete severing of the posterior longitudinal ligament.
Wow.
Right on the MRI. So then we started doing more work together and she said to me, I'd like to introduce you to the inventor of the MRI. I said, how do you know him? She goes, my father's the VP of sales of the company. So that's how lead in, that's how I got to meet Dr. Raymond DeMaiden, my dearest colleague and friend, the inventor of the MRI and the inventor of the upright MRI. And then he, when he saw what we were doing in terms of scanning, imaging, educating him about the cranial cervical, the upper cervical area, ligaments and instability, he became one of my hugest fans. And his company then supported any of the ideas or thoughts or dreams that I had. They helped make them happen. And that's what evolved us to today, being able to scan people in ways that other traditional scanning hasn't. Yeah.
And it's like one drop of water, right? I mean, you just ask the right question, meet the right person, whatever it is. And I'm sure you were kind of blown away when you realized, now I have the inventor here with me. And wasn't there a story around his wife or something that you took care of?
No, actually, it was a story. Well, I've treated his whole family. Actually, it was a story about him. So he would come up here at least once a month and bring 2, 3, 4 patients. And they'd always want to come and observe us do what we do. So he came up on a Monday, we saw a couple of patients, and he came the next day with a couple more. And his cousin ran into my office and said, Dr. DeMaiden just went out of the car and almost had a drop attack. He said, you got to come out and check him. So I ran out the back of my office, he's sitting in his car. The first thing I do is I shake his hand, and while I'm shaking his hand, I'm checking his radial pulse.
Yeah.
Because I want to make sure that he's not going to die on my watch, because if the inventor of the MRI is found to be dying, with
a chiropractor close
parking
by, lot, right?
Yeah, right, you're going to blame me. So to that point, I said to him, listen, I want you to go ahead and go up the road for me. There is a urgent care center. I said, I want you to have a, an MRA. I want to check to make sure you didn't have a vascular accident. So long story short, we sent him up there. We found he had a stenotic basilar artery. And we brought him back to my office. And Dr. Hartshill, my radiologist, we looked at the imaging. You're going to get a kick out of this. And while I'm sitting there, he keeps snapping his fingers. And I turn and I look at him like, what are you doing? And Dr. DeMaiden's hearing had been deteriorating over time. But while we're doing a remote for Dr. Hartshill, the radiologist, reviewing his scan, he says to Dr. Hartshill, I've been having a hard time hearing my left ear. He said, but now I can't hear a damn thing. And then Hartshill said, well, your CSF is flowing abnormally around the internal auditory canal. You ought to have Scott adjust you. And he said, I've been telling Scott I wanted to adjust my atlas. So we had to take two of us to walk him in. He couldn't hold up very well. I adjusted him, rested him. He was able to stand up, walk out. That night he went down to Columbia Presbyterian because they were thinking about putting a stent in that stenotic basilar artery. I called him the next morning. His son got on the phone and said, Dad, his dizziness, it's all gone. He said there was no thrombus in the basilar artery. And he said, he wanted me to tell you that his hearing came back. It was a Harvey Lillard moment. So it was a great honor to take care of him. And he subsequently continued on with care. And he was, towards the end of his years, a little bit forgetful. But every time we would adjust him, the spinal fluid would move and his cognition would improve.
That's so beautiful, and it's so crazy. And looking at your imaging, when you lecture and you show the imaging, the spinal CSF being pulled, and then then the post after the atlas gets clear and you can see it flowing down. I don't think people really understand in the world, I'm not necessarily to chiropractors, but outside, how important CSF flow is,
Yeah, CSF originally was thought, in fact, Dr. DeMaiden in 1960 said to me, he was told to do a CSF tap. The medical profession thought CSF was its inert fluid that just held the brain up and cushioned it.
Yeah.
And of course, obviously in our profession, we know that CSF moves. So what ended up happening is that in time, about 2015, now Dr. Hartshill and I, my medical radiologist colleague, we've been doing CSF studies. That's another story, another day. But we've been doing CSF studies since kind of early, mid-2000. We co-worked that process with Phonar Corp. Fonar started to make a CSF flow software in 1998 for the Chiari Institute in Long Island. They never took an interest in it. And then one night I was up where I scan up in Albany, New York, and there was an engineer there who's a good friend of mine, and the patient had low-lying cerebellar tonsillar ectopia. And I said, I wonder what the spinal fluid or what the ectopia is doing to the flow of spinal fluid. And the engineer said, you ought to call up Fonar. They have a software that's been developed. It's not completed, but I think it might be able to go ahead and answer the question, what happens when the atlas misaligns and the tonsils obstruct the fluid? So we did, and luckily we got access to it. Then it took us a year and a half to perfect, but ultimately it was found that spinal fluid doesn't just cushion and hold the brain up. It is literally what removes the metabolic waste and toxins with every cardiorespiratory cycle. And then that leads into Dr. Jeff Ilip, who's one of the lead researchers in the discovery of what's called the glymphatic system. The glymphatic system is what they found to be the spinal fluid's ability to wash away metabolic waste and toxins. Right. And their research showed any impediment in that flow can be at the root of neuroinflammatory conditions and neurodegenerative brain diseases, including MS, Parkinson's, ALS, dementia, and they included it could be a piece of the puzzle of autism. Yeah. So CSF is the holy grail of the brain and central nervous system's health.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, CSF and, you know, we know chiropractors, you know, correct subluxations and we work with the nervous system, but we can't leave out the CSF. We can't leave out this stuff. I mean, it is, and even though when the subluxation, at least in the cranial cervical area, gets cleared, right, allowing that to flow, you know, the byproduct of that is incredible. It's not just neurological, it's the flow of CSF and having the body be, you know, looking at it. And that's where these students these days, you know, they're coming out, they understand, at least our students understand what subluxation is, they understand the nervous system, but they are really about the brain communicating. Yes. Right? Communicating to the body, right? And that's kind of where they're at, where me and you, we're like hard bone on soft nerve. Their brain communicating the body, and this stuff makes tremendous sense to them, you know?
Yeah, so to your point, what we've learned is, again, as you realize, as we just said, you know, spinal fluid is literally the miracle grow of the brain. It what constantly keeps the brain replenishing nutrients and removing metabolic waste. So I kind of look at it as faulty plumbing when there's an upper cervical subluxation. It has the ability to not only create a choke point, so when C0112 misalign or subluxate, you're going to get a narrowing. And that narrowing, of course, can not only create a choke point for craniospinal hydrodynamics, which would include the spinal fluid flow, but we're also going to go ahead, when atlas subluxates, as it rotates, certainly if it goes anteriorly, it has this ability to go ahead and mechanically compress the jugular vein. But along with the jugular vein sits the carotid sheath. It's a big one. So inside the carotid sheath is the jugular vein, the carotid artery, and 9, 10, 11, and 12 cranial nerves. So a lot of this cranial cervical syndrome types of things that people are getting, this is going beyond the typical neck pain, arm pain, leg pain, back pain. But when that atlas subluxates, it does have this ability to not only create a neurological problem, it can create a neurovascular problem, it can create a neurobiomechanical problem, and it can create a craniospinal hydrodynamic problem. So I don't think in our time going through school, this model wasn't available. Now, because of technology, we are seeing that atlas subluxation is doing a whole lot more than we ever thought it would be or thought it could do. And I believe it completely, because we're in research in this topic, I believe that the extreme increase in neuroinflammatory diseases and neurodegenerative brain diseases are likely due to more robust trauma that we're having at this point compared to when you and I were, you know, 20, 25 years ago. Yeah. And I can say that the spines I'm treating today are different than the spines I treated 25 years ago. There's so much more instability. There's so much more problem.
So much more. And, you know, that, but the old saying, what, you can't have a head injury without having a neck injury, right? And they would exactly. Just say, oh, yeah, they're concussed, or, oh, yeah, they're, you know, that kind of thing. And vice versa. You can't, you know, get whiplash. It's going to be affecting everything, the whole dynamic, you know, into the head, you know. And it's so interesting, Scott, because, you know, you look at the research and we know, undoubtedly, we know chiropractic works, you know, we know the results that come from it. This is not, you know, voodoo. It's not woo woo. It is scientific. And we know that. And with this technology, it's showing us even more, or proving to us even more, the why behind it, right? You know, like the lymphs, you know, that stuff. It's proving that there's more to it than we know. Even if we didn't know about it, the research wasn't there, it'd still work.
Oh, we always know that
doing
it worked,
you know. But now we're getting the answers. Why 9, 10, and 11 cranial nerves, you know, this kind of stuff. That yes, there's answers to this stuff, and now it enables us not to treat people, but enables us to be able to say, yes, well, you know what? Most likely there's an upper cervical complex going on. You got something in the upper cervical complex that needs to be taken care of, you know?
Sure.
And it's like, it's just beautiful. And, you know, I love, you know, one of our dear friends together is Jeff Shulton. You know, I know you.
Of course.
And Jeff is just a very dear friend of mine. And
a gem.
You know, Jeff has always said this, you know, he says everyone should have at least 3 chiropractors.
Mm-hmm.
Heard him say that. Upper cervical, you know,
right.
Maybe a tonal or full spine, maybe an athletic chiropractor, you know, pediatric chiropractor, whatever it is, but you need at least 3 chiropractors. It shouldn't just be one person fitting everything, but you know, we should never walk around with a subluxation above C5, you know, just should never.
It is, in my opinion, it is the greatest time to be a chiropractor. We've got through the forefathers fighting to keep their license and not get put in jail. Then we got to the developmental part where we were trying to figure out how to best adjust the subluxation from whatever perspective one chooses. Doesn't matter what procedure technique, as long as at the end of the day, you've done your job. And then of course, now we're into the newer phase where we have, and I can absolutely, absolutely state, I've got thousands of pre and post imaging studies showing the efficacy of an upper cervical adjustment on an upper cervical subluxation. I have absolutely clear and concise imaging showing before and after, not just changes in MS cases. I've had 2 little kids in the last year and a half, a 3-year-old that was a week away from having a Chiari decompression, and we adjusted his atlas, and I got the before and after. It completely restored. Not only did his cervical tonsils move up and never need the surgery, but his head, he had hydrocephalus, the head was expanding, everything went back to normal, curve is perfect, and one adjustment and he's doing great. A second one was 18-month-old. The pediatric ophthalmologist told the parents if they didn't take this kid to the pediatric neurosurgeon was going to do an experimental surgery that has only been done in adults and is only 40% effective, never been vetted in a child. And when I looked at the scan, I said, whatever you're going to do in the head means nothing, because the upper cervical subluxation was so severe and the cerebral tonsils are so stuffed into their foramen magnum, it was a cork in the mouth of the bottle. Nothing they did in the cranium was going to help that. So we adjusted this little boy. And believe it or not, when the parents chose not to do the neurosurgery, do you know that the pediatric ophthalmologist went ahead and called child services to try to take that little boy away from the parents? Good news is, I told the parents you need a second opinion at another university. It was 5 weeks after my adjustment, they took the kid to the new other university setting. And subsequently they said, the new MRI already showed CSF was flowing beautiful. It showed that his head circumference was getting smaller, the hydrocephalus was releasing. And they said, they did some sort of fluorescent test of the eyes, and they said, it's benign, your kid's not gonna go blind. Long story short, I just got a text 2 days ago, this little boy's made a full recovery, his head is perfectly normal, and I have his pre and post scan, and he has a perfect textbook curve, perfect textbook head. We're doing more than we've ever dreamed we could. The cool thing is that we have pictures now that we can show it.
Right. And that's great. That's exciting. And here's a crazy thing. You know, it's that old analogy of either building a fence up on the cliff or having an ambulance in the valley, right? And we're still society-wise in the ambulance in the valley waiting for these things to happen. I mean, you know, if I could build my perfect world, in every hospital, every trauma center, there needs to be a chiropractor there, you know, doing specific work, right, around whatever it is that's there. Any sports place, orthopedic clinic, you know, there needs to be a chiropractor. It's like when you look and you see this stuff and you see the changes, and thank you and congratulations, and it's awesome, right, that little boy. What about the 100 or 1,000 other little boys that ended up having the tonsil surgery, right? And, you know, or whatever they did, or are living their life right now, you know, in a state of, you know, dis-ease, right? It's just, it's criminal. I mean, the way I look at
it. It is criminal because doing those types of surgery on someone that young, we had a case many years ago, they were going to bring this five-year-old girl to us for treatment. The grandfather was ready to bring her up, no problem. And then somehow they were talked into doing a decompression. So they did a decompression on her. From the minute she woke up, she was excruciating in pain. And every day. So then 8 months later, the parents contact me and the mother's crying on the phone. We don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. I said, same with the new imaging. When they screwed this little child, this five-year-old's atlas to the skull, they screwed it so hard that it bent the dents, and the dents went completely horizontal and was stabbing the brainstem. So I said to her, whatever you do, you got to tell these surgeons they got one more shot at this. They already missed the first one. And if they don't get it right, the second one, you're going to ruin this little girl forever. She coded on the table twice. They were in a hurry. They just did a bad job. So surgeons with young children is just not good unless it's something catastrophic. You have no other choice. A quick note to that point. Because we're doing so many imaging, I have made a very strong observation that in 1970, the rate of C-section was 2-3%. About 5 years ago, JAMA published an article. It's up to 30% in the States. And I'm not against C-section, but the JAMA article said it should only be used for fetal distress. Yeah. And it became a matter of convenience.
Yes.
Someone wants to get it done. It's $18,000 for a C-section. It's $8,000 for a regular vaginal delivery. So what I'm finding on these young children that we're scanning, I'm finding their C01 and atlases are so malformed. I do not believe it to be congenital. I believe it's something that is inherent at the birth. And to your point, in the hospital, not only having a chiropractor in every hospital, we've known this since we were in school.
Every delivery,
Every darn baby should be checked at birth, because what I believe is that because they're not bone yet, those joints are cartilage. They're like al dente spaghetti. So when you create a deforming stress, I believe that that can create a deformity in the joint. And if you don't adjust them quick enough, as they get older, that deformity will begin to calcify, and then you're stuck with that abnormal joint. And those abnormal joints, from my observation and research, are the weaker joint when it comes to subluxation. Just a speculation, just an observation, but I think we're onto something.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see what happens over the next years when you look at that, because it's so important, as you know, biomechanics. It's so important looking at structure. You know, we always know structure dictates function, and then of course the nervous system, but all the other things around it, like we said, CSF, all that stuff. Hey, listen, we're kind of winding down, and Sure. It's amazing stuff. I mean, I could listen forever, but I want to ask you, the last time we spoke, you were starting to set up your own research imaging center, I believe it was, and I could be off on that. Tell us what's going on with that.
So a quick story. Again, I had a gentleman whose son sadly had taken an antibiotic therapy and had an adverse reaction. They ended up putting him in an institution and drugged him for 3 months. And then his father called up and asked, can I be of help? I said, well, I certainly would try. So we brought him up to Albany. I did my scanning on him. I did the AO adjustment. And the next day, the father called me up and said, I don't know what you've done to my son, but this is the best he's felt in almost a year. So then he went ahead and asked me if I would check his son on Sunday, and because he had to fly to Florida. So I did. And when he came in, he said, listen, he goes, my family and I have a not-for-profit foundation. He goes, you did amazing things for my son. We'd like to offer you the opportunity to get you your own private imaging center. And I said, I'm speechless. So he said, you want us to buy the one up in Albany where you work out? I said, no, but I said, that's a 5.5-hour round trip. I've been doing that for almost 20 years now. And he said, well, go find a place close to and we'll happily support that. So I kid you not, it's been over 4 years. The problem has been we've had numerous places, but an upright MRI is 225,000 pounds. You have one on your facility.
Yeah.
It's got to be on a slab. Yep, got to be on a slab. It's got to have 11-foot ceilings. It's got a very unique requirement. So we have been working in a couple of places. The last one we had already, had planned. The landlord said, we're going to give you a curfew, and we're going to tell you who can practice in your office. And I'm like, you can't tell me, you can't give me a curfew because I might work till 3 o'clock in the morning doing research. And I said, you can't tell me who I can have in my practice because we want to have a functional medicine doc in here. We want to have someone that does regenerative therapy. We want to have chiropractic. So long story short, the gentleman was just in. He just came to get his adjustment. The gentleman I told you about that's funding a project. And he said he's 100% in. He's 100% behind our research. All I have to do is find a place to put it in. So I had to hire a new realtor, and we're going to find a place.
Yeah.
It'll be about 20 minutes south of here. And we want to have an upright MRI. We'll have a DMX. We'll have digital X-ray, probably cone beam. We want to get a 3 Tesla high field scanner because 3 Teslas now have sequences that we can do brain mapping. And there are sequences that we can check a patient before an adjustment and find areas of lack of perfusion of blood in the brain. And I want to give them an adjustment. And then I want to do a post. And I want to see if we can see those areas that were deficient light up. And if we do that, we will be all over this. It's just more support of the importance of an upper cervical subluxation being corrected, restoring neurological, neurovascular, neurobiomechanical, and craniospinal hydrodynamics. It's the future, and our profession has never been better situated.
It's great. It is awesome. Well, keep me informed on what's happening with that, because we support that 100%. And just so you know, when they put the upright MRI at LifeWest, they had the dynamite like 6 feet into the ground. You're right. And put concrete and do all this. It's amazing, you know, what they had to do to just to bring it in. Right. And it's just crazy. But man, we are so blessed, man. The profession is so blessed, Dr. Scott, to have you doing the work you're doing. I know you do a lot with as we said, the ICA Upper Cervical Council, and it's not just you. I know you've got a lot of people who support you and who are interested in what you do. And but thank you. Thank you for all you're doing to move this and constantly looking at the cutting edge of what's going on, where we can actually be able to show it. And like you said, we should be every trauma room, every delivery room, it's just the educational process. We have to get it to the point where we correct the subluxation in our quote unquote healthcare system, at least in the US, you know?
Yes. And I want to thank you for being a pioneer and being so receptive. Your college has been just an icon in terms of upper cervical, whatever the upper cervical programs are. You've been a great advocate of me in terms of allowing me to come out and present and share some of these things with you and the students. And again, you're doing a magnificent job. We need you. And we encourage you to continue on the direction that you're going in. And God bless you for allowing a venue and a place for not only teaching students chiropractic, but going above the regular bar to make sure that they're not just basic chiropractors, that they are looking to do the things that we've just discussed today. And I really appreciate that. And thank you for that.
I appreciate it. We're going to end right there, because that's the way to end, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you. And to our viewers, thank you. Listen, you guys are coming with us. You're listening to us every week. We keep bringing phenomenal people like Dr. Scott Rosa, and our LifeWest leadership lines, and the viewership is growing because you're sharing this. And there are people who need to hear what Dr. Rosa said, chiropractors and non-chiropractors, people who are having issues that they don't know that there's an answer to. So please, if you'll just keep sharing these, it means the world. Not for the numbers of people who watch it, but for the changes that we can make in the world with chiropractic, right? Because that's really what we're about. So thank you. We drop these every other week. Opposite weeks are the Life by LifeWest with me and my wife, Dr. Mary. And we just know that we love and appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing, hugging those around you, spreading chiropractic, and letting them know that there's no greater power than the power within the body, and that the power in the body has the ability to heal the body. And all we need to do is just step out of the way, but get the system clear, step out of the way, and let the body do what it's supposed to do. That's chiropractic. So as we go on to create a brighter future for humanity, all of us, Dr. Scott, myself, will bid you adieu, and I'll see you at the next LifeWest Leadership Line. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today, and for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.